It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Master Plan World. Welcome to our latest show. It's a pleasure to have you all out there listening. I'm Chloe Thomas, creator of the E-commerce Master Plan, author, speaker, and consultant, and I focus on e-commerce business strategy and marketing. If you've got thoughts about that or any of our podcasts or questions about e-commerce, then go and join in the conversation in our Facebook group, which you'll find via ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook, or just go and search for E-commerce Master Plan World on Facebook and you'll find us. It'd be great to have you in the gang. So I want to introduce you to our special guest today. Al Gerry is the founder and CEO at Zigzag Global, a genius, absolutely genius, returns management system. In this interview, though, we're going to be diving more into Al's serious e-commerce pedigree, which includes a number of household names, including Mountain Warehouse and Office Shoes, and his time as a consultant at marketplace and international specialist Pentagon. And of course, we're going to be getting a few tips from him about just how to make returns work for you. There is a lot we're going to be covering today, so I hope it will provide some inspiration for all of you. Hi, Al.
Hi, Chloe.
Great to have you here. And I've just given our listeners a ridiculously quick overview of you, your business, where you are at the moment, all your history. But take us back. How did you get started off in e-commerce?
Originally, I was a seller. So I used to retail computer cables and accessories on eBay and Amazon. So I was selling online back in the very late 90s and early 2000s as a retailer before I went more on a consultancy side to work with large high street retailers and help them launch internationally.
Wow, so you've been marketplace since before many people knew marketplace existed?
Pretty much, yeah. So I wasn't the first, but I was amongst the first, and I think I've been there, done that, and sold the t-shirt.
So you continued with marketplaces through to when you were at Pentagon?
Yeah, very much so. So I took Office Shoes online. They were one of the very first eBay outlets when eBay first started attracting high street retailers to sell on eBay. And then I worked for Mountain Warehouse, who had at the time about 180 stores worldwide, but no real serious marketplace presence other than Amazon. And it was quite a seasonal business with some products like ski wear that typically wouldn't sell during the summer. So we launched that brand to help them sell products to places like Australia, for instance, where you've got a different seasonal temperature and different customer that you can approach all year round. So I worked with some large high street retailers to help expand their international marketplace capabilities and integrate them into various software platforms. So I've worked with the likes of Channel Advisor and Volo, and also built my own integrations into about 17 different marketplaces as well.
And I love the fact you're talking about the different reasons there for people going onto marketplaces and the pure breadth of marketplaces you've got, because I think it's the person who doesn't start off as an eBay Amazon seller, so like not the FBA world and the eBay seller world, but the more traditional online retailer world or retailer world, it seems to me like marketplaces for a long time was a little bit of a dirty word. And it was, oh, no, we don't do that because we don't own the customer, so we can't possibly do that. But it's almost become now more of a situation of it's a great way to improve, from what I've seen out there, cash flow and margin. You know, when you're selling overseas at different times of the year to try and get that full price sale. Are those the two main drivers you're seeing for retailers choosing to add the marketplace arm to their business, or are there others out there?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. So you've got the smaller retail, and it's their first way into retail. Mm-hmm. It's their first way of trading online. And for the larger retailers, it's adding on extra revenue and unlocking new customers in different countries. But quite often, marketplace first is a very good strategy for trading internationally where you may not be established. So I've worked with one brand in particular who had stores all over the UK, had no presence in Germany, but within 6 or 9 months, that German Amazon store was bigger than some of the stores that have been running for 15 to 20 years in the UK. So, you know, there's a lot of velocity there, and you can get there very quickly and test and even potentially fail quickly without heavy investment by going marketplace first.
And, you know, back, we're probably talking 2004, 2005, I was involved in helping some mail order businesses go international. And my God, the work it took to do that. You know, we had to create a website in German. We had to create a website in French. We had to buy the domain names for them. We had to, you know, get the everything translated, cut back the merchandising, redo the catalogue, get the stock over there, organise a call centre. We had to do all this stuff before we could even work out if it was a good or bad idea, let alone if it was going to be a great idea or not. So it strikes me as kind of a bit of a no-brainer these days of a way to test is just kind of to do that Amazon rollout across Europe and see if there's some traction there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, marketplaces have already got the things in place that you need. So they've got traffic, they've got customers that are there to buy. So they've gone onto the marketplace in order to buy. They've got a payment gateway. They've got a mobile solution ready in place. And they've got trust. So they have a feedback system that consumers understand and can use to decide whether they want to buy from you or not.
Now, I know that it is possible to literally turn on Germany overnight, as a friend of mine was working for a business that did that, and she was running customer services. And the first she knew about the fact that they were selling in Germany was when she got German emails in German landing in the inbox. That's obviously not the best way to do it. So there's clearly a few things you do need to get sorted out before you turn on another country. Have you got a couple of things of what those might be for people?
Translations are incredibly important to make sure that your product is properly translated, and I don't just mean Google translated, but it's translated for the local market, and it's regionalized to a certain extent, so that, you know, in Australia, you know, thongs in Australia are flip-flops, they're not thongs as we know them in the UK. So it's understanding the local customer. Mm-hmm. Making sure that you've got your delivery and your returns sorted out so that you can get the product there quickly with tracking wherever possible, and you can get the product back cheaply and efficiently if the customer wants to return it. And also making sure that your sizing is appropriate for the local market. One size doesn't fit all, and the size charts for domestic markets in the UK are not the same as the US or Canada or anywhere else in Europe.
So there's a few key bits, mainly really on the looking after the customer side of things, aren't they? Getting the information right and making sure you can get it to them easily.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd say it depends on the size of the business, but don't be afraid to outsource that to a partner that can help you get there more quickly.
You mean in terms of finding someone to do your translate, finding the expert to do the translations, the expert to do the delivery, the expert to sort out the returns?
Exactly. Don't try and do it all yourself. Very much so, you know, so hire experts in the various fields to help you get there quicker, because they've done it before and made the mistakes for you.
I have to say, when it comes to internationalisation, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that front, because having done a couple of them the old school way in my time, the distraction it is to the business. You know, so, oh, we'll just do that. And it's like everyone's workload kind of increases 50%, and no one's spending 50% more time in the office. Everyone's letting something else that's part of the core original business slide. So you both get it done better and you protect the original business if you're finding the expert to help you with that, you know, in my experience anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, find somebody that knows what they're doing and don't scrimp and save on it. You know, seen retailers that come a cropper by using Google Translate and using a cheap courier, and it just hurts their feedback.
And do you see, obviously, you know, there's those who are doing it right, they're seeing the sales growth. Is there much of a move then to open the own brand website in the business? You know, where do you, if your marketplace takes off in Germany, in France, in Spain, in Australia, What's the next step? A business is going, great, we'll take that, but we're not going to do anything else, or are they taking the next step?
I think that the next step should be profitability, because quite often when you first start out going international, it's not always as profitable to do it in some markets while you have those upfront costs like translation. And certainly opening your own brand website is an option, but then you've got to drive traffic to that. So, you know, some real considerations around how much traffic you need for a brand that may not be established in that local market and may have no brand recognition whatsoever. So, you know, is it even worth doing an own branded website versus spending a bit more time making sure that marketplaces can be even better? Maybe a better solution for some retailers that haven't got the budgets to waste on websites that may fail.
It does quite often amaze me the number of people I speak to which obviously is, you know, it's quite a small niche, those who are going international, but the number of people I speak to in that situation who, despite the fact they can't convert their UK Amazon customers where they have the brand to a UK direct customer, they seem to think they're going to convert 50% of their German Amazon customers to their own website the day they launch.
Yeah. I agree with you.
It's like, do you honestly think it's that? I know there's a lot different when it comes to selling in Germany, but customer, you know, an Amazon customer is still an Amazon customer.
Yeah, but also selling on your own website is not free. It costs money to get traffic, you know, Google pay-per-click fees or sponsored ads or whatever, and then various promo codes on top. And before you know it, actually the commission that you would pay to a marketplace is very similar to what you'd pay to sell on your own website, but if you really, really cost it out. So don't be afraid to invest into marketplaces and don't see that commission fee as a big barrier, because actually you're paying it after you've sold, not an investment up front.
Yeah, it's something which I think, you know, as you probably as well as I get asked to do what you think your trends are going to be for the year for various outlets. And one of the things I was talking about back in January was that I felt marketplaces and internationalization were kind of going to merge in the form of a solution to the problems that people are finding with the political and economic uncertainty. You know, there's the fluctuating exchange rates, consumers becoming a little bit harder to sell to. And that with all the kind of the groundwork that's been done over the last few years, people have now kind of become a little bit more open-minded to the world of marketplaces. And the systems are there to go, let's split our risk. Let's get multiple countries, let's get multiple currencies coming into our bank accounts so we're less at risk. Is that something which, A, do you think I'm crazy for saying that? You're more than welcome to. And two, are you seeing that happening?
Yeah, definitely. The weak pound, certainly from a UK seller's perspective, is really helping cross-border trade. And that, I think, will just continue for at least the next couple of years with Brexit. I do see it. It's becoming easier to ship abroad, so faster transit times, better customs clearance times in many countries, and even higher de minimis rates. So when you import products, certain countries are importing the threshold or raising the threshold to make it easier for consumers to import products from abroad. So it's a good time to be exporting. And if you look at the chart of where the UK is right now, we're probably about the number three country. So China's the biggest, the US is second, and then UK and Germany in terms of online gross turnover. The UK is going to be well outside the top 10 in the next 10 years as new markets emerge. So you know, countries like India, Mexico, Brazil, who've all got massive populations, start to import more, and they start to buy online from their mobiles, and they're buying from marketplaces. They're not buying from direct websites.
We'll come back to that in a second, but I just want to double check I'm understanding de minimis right, because I know some of our listeners were going, de minimis what? So the de minimis bit is the tax which the consumer is liable for, the threshold rate at which the consumer is liable for. So if I buy a product for £200 from somewhere, you know, $200 from America, do I have to pay tax on that as it comes across in the post? Is that right?
It actually used to be around $200 and it's now $800. So what that means is that a US consumer can import something for $500 or $600 with no extra duty to pay, which actually makes it very attractive to buy from the UK with the weak pound at the moment. Previously, they would have had to have paid tax if it was above a certain value.
Plus, it has the benefit of being, you know, if your product prices and your AOVs are below a certain point, it's something you can kind of take off the worry list as the retailer.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And obviously, some sellers can also roll in the fact that they haven't got to pay VAT on non-EU transactions as well.
Cool. Now, I will come on to returns very, very shortly. But for those of you who are holding out for returns advice here, but you mentioned about, you know, those big growth markets, that marketplaces are a great way to get into the growth markets of India, China, etc., Brazil and so forth. What have you got, just to kind of wrap up our marketplaces international bit, have you just got a couple of tips for people who are going, okay, I'm convinced, Al, Chloe, I'm convinced, I want to do international marketplaces. Where do they start? Where do they begin the process?
I'd start with an English speaking marketplace if you're an English speaking seller. So you know, the US, Australia are good starting points because it's less expensive. You have got to pay for the translations, mm-hmm. and don't launch into markets that require translations unless you've got good ones. So that's kind of a phase two. I would begin on Amazon, quite frankly. It's probably got more traffic than most marketplaces in most countries. However, depending on the country you go into, Amazon isn't always the leader. So certainly, if you look at the core European countries and the US, Amazon comes out in front. If you look at places like China and Japan, then Amazon is a long, long way behind, and you need to look at Tmall and Rakuten.
Okay, cool. Right. Well, let's talk returns now, because returns is a subject which is close to my heart, because as many people in our position, Alan, that will know, you often go around a retailer's warehouse and there's this stack of unloved boxes in the corner, which for the retailer, they see it's a problem, and I'm there looking at it. That's money. That's potentially profit and cash flow and money. So do you want to tell us, have you got a few tips, as you're a global returns genius, have you got a few tips for our listeners on how they can make their returns program work for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say make it easy. Don't hide your returns policy. So try and consider a longer returns period. And include your returns information on your confirmation email. So thank you for shopping with this retailer. You know, if you want to return your item, click here. Don't hide the information. I would add returns or exchange tick boxes on the inbound labels as well, to make the processing a lot faster, so that you can prioritize the channel the product was sold on. So if there's feedback involved, you're focusing on those orders as they come back more quickly than you would if it was a website order.
Wow, so you'd prioritize processing the returns based on Amazon, etc., where you get killed for bad reviews, to your own website, to the phone and postal orders as
yeah,
such.
Yeah, definitely. But it's just a simple box on the front of the label, just to make it really obvious as to which channel that was sold on. So if it says AMZ, you know that you've got to deal with that first. So if you are faced with a pile of returns, get through them quickly. I'd also look at improving your dispatch notes, so making sure that there are reason codes available for consumers to tell you why they're returning items, so you don't keep on making the same mistake and selling the same product over and over again, that it comes back again and again. Really important to control the cost of the returns, so don't let the consumer decide how to send it back to you by letting the customer send it back, special delivery or something like that. You know, you need to take a bit more control over providing a label for that consumer that helps get that product back cost efficiently and ideally with tracking. Make sure that the dispatch notes are in the correct language. Frequently, I've seen retailers who can't deliver product to places like Russia, and it's simply because the postman doesn't read English. You know, he'll read Cyrillics, he won't read English, and the product will have got right to the last mile, but not to its final destination, and it comes back undelivered. Just because the customer speaks English doesn't mean the postman does. Definitely look at a localized returns address. So it's a requirement for some marketplaces, actually. So people like Zalando and Amazon require you to have a local marketplace returns address before you can even start trading. So it's much faster to return locally and easier to get the consumer refunded if the product is back in the warehouse more quickly.
So if someone's looking to get that sorted out for themselves, what they're really looking for is not just a warehouse that will take in their returns and ship them to them as soon as they've got a pallet full, but someone who will process those returns so the customer service stays really good.
Yeah, precisely. So ideally, you need to know what was in that parcel going out, and then do that through a portal coming back, so that if the consumer says, I want to return an item, you know which item's coming back and you know a reason why, and we're collecting that information. And then you can issue the refund when the product is still in the local country. So if it's a UK retailer selling out to a German customer, that product could be refunded on day one when it hits the German warehouse, rather than further down the line when it hits the UK warehouse, which is a much better customer experience.
Okay, cool. We've got time for one more of those returns advice, if you've got one.
Yeah, absolutely. I would experiment with free versus paid returns. Free returns most definitely increase your sales. Returns are not free, everybody knows that. So if you can reduce the cost of those returns in the first place, then you will see a real benefit to offering a free return and a higher trust level from your customer.
Excellent. Because at the end of the day, guys, it's all about giving the customer that great service, but making sure that the profitability still works in your favour, of course. Okay, after that set of fantastic tips about returns, it's time for the top tips round. Now, I love the top tip section, as you all know, because it gives us some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Al, first up, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I would say it would have to be How to Get Rich by Felix Dennis.
Ooh, what does that, I was going to say, what's that about? Well, clearly it's going to be about how to get rich, but can you tell us a bit more about it?
He was a publishing genius, and he made his fortune selling computer magazines back in the 1980s. But I think anything you can learn from that book can be applied to any business, not just an online business. And he makes you really think about what you're building as a business. He's not going to necessarily give you a manual on how to get rich step by step, but tips along the way that you can apply to your own business. And it's a really fantastic read, actually. It's a funny book.
Oh, cool. Funny always helps, I find. Okay, the traffic top tip then. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Free returns.
Simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. You'll get more traffic, more customers, and higher conversion if you offer free returns.
An excellent piece of advice, as I'm sure will this next one be. The tool top tip, Al, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Yeah, we use a program called Jira, J-I-R-A, which is was introduced to me by my developers, who use it to keep the development on track. But it can be used in other applications for to-do lists, and it is definitely very useful if you're building software or trying to launch various stages of a project.
Oh, cool. Not one I've heard of before. We get a lot of project management tools, but I'm 99% certain we've never had Jira before. So that's another one to add to our lists. The startup top tip then, finally, if you met someone this weekend who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business, what would be your first tip for them?
Launch on marketplaces first. But if you don't know what you're doing, outsource.
Cool. And presumably launch on marketplaces first because you'll get that customer feedback, or simply for the sales?
I think you'll get the traffic more quickly than if you tried to do it yourself. But obviously pay attention to the feedback, because it can kill you if you don't get it right. That's why you might need some help doing it first off.
Okay. Brilliant. Well, Masterplan World, you can find those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, where you'll see a link to this show. Al, before we say goodbye, you've been like incredibly generous with all your insights and advice around marketplaces, international and returns today. And I've barely given you a chance to mention Zigzag, which, as I said at the beginning, is a phenomenal return system. So do you want to just let people know very quickly what Zigzag do and where they can find you and Zigzag on the web and social media?
Absolutely. We're a software platform that connects major retailers to a global network of warehouses. We're in over 130 countries now, and our mission, if you like, is to help retailers become more sustainable while they cut costs. So we can save you up to 50% on the cost of your returns, improve the speed of customer refunds, and make sure that stock gets back in the supply chain more quickly.
So we're literally saying that if you're a UK business and a customer in Australia returns something, it comes into your warehouse, gets processed, packaged, ready to go back out, can be listed on your website or dealt with in other ways.
That's right.
And you handle the whole thing for the retailer.
Yeah, so we'll provide a customer-facing returns portal to get that item back through, let's say, Australia Post, and then that will come into our Sydney warehouse. We'll make that product available for resale, so we'll grade that product. We'll tell the retailer you're safe to refund the customer, and then we can even ship that out to a new customer in Australia without the cost of bringing that all the way back around the world.
So massive time savings, customer annoyedness savings, money savings, and generally just all around a great service.
Yeah, I mean, particularly it's very relevant to the fashion industry. We work with some high street and pure play fashion retailers, and some of those have returns rates of 30, 40, even 50%. And in Germany, that could be as high as 70%. So if you've got 70% of your stock off sale at any one time, there's a real onus on you to get that back on sale more quickly and more cheaply and more efficiently.
Excellent. And now, where can the listeners find out about Zigzag?
So we're at www.zigzag.global, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Zigzag Global.
Excellent. Well, I'll add links to all of that and everything else we've talked about today in the show notes. Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or just head to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use the search box. Al, thank you so much for being on the show today and being so generous with your various areas of expertise. It's been really useful. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Chloe.
So a couple of little masterclasses there from Al's varied experience around the world of marketplaces and using those for international selling to reduce those exchange rate risks many of us are experiencing at the moment. And also, of course, all that experience he's had doing those things, working with those high street fashion retailers that have led him to create Zigzag Global, and the amazing returns advice he gave you. Just follow a couple of those returns hints and tips, and you'll improve the profitability and improve the orders, the order taking at the beginning. Returns is a bit like free delivery. It's a bit like delivery in general, really. It can help you both get a customer and it can help you retain a customer as well. So it's well worth making sure you've got it right. Do you have some strong opinions on returns international or marketplaces? Well, if you do, come and start a discussion about it in our Facebook group. It's the E-commerce Masterplan World Facebook group, and you'll find it either by searching for it on Facebook, strangely enough, or via ecommercemasterplan.com/Facebook. If you love what you're hearing on the show, please do share it with your e-commerce friends. Email, snail mail, in your returns parcels, maybe. I'm not sure that entirely works. But however you want to spread the word, it would be great, because I want to get this great knowledge out to many more people. And of course, if you really want to go for it, then you could put a review on iTunes for me. Have a great week, everyone, and keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.